Hello and welcome to the Surface Tension Podcast. My name is Alex. My co-host over here is Craig. We are going to be exploring deep questions and looking for deep answers to spiritual questions and questions about life in general. We're happy to have you here, and here we go.
Hi, welcome to our podcast. Alex, I'm excited to be with you. It's always fun to explore new topics. And this morning, it's another one that's challenging for me, and I hate it because I'm going to do Gnip Gnop at some point. I don't even know what that game is, but it's used to describe when you send something over to the other person.
I've never heard that phraseology
exactly.
In my life, but
right.
I appreciate the way that it sounds.
That's right. It's just that lobbying. Next week, we're going to lob the tennis ball over to you, and we're going to put you under the microscope.
Yeah.
Because we keep having topics that are more threatening to my heart a little bit. I had a conversation with the pastor yesterday, and it was really good, and it was so healthy and deep. We were talking about how we can navigate our lives through just our head, trying to think our way through life, through just our heart, just trying to feel our way through life, or actually with our soul, and how we navigate life with a fullness of both the head and the heart and a soul engaged. And
that's serious business, man. That's no joke.
It was tremendous, and I loved it, and I felt honored to be a part of this conversation. And he asked me a question that really actually caused me to pause. He said, what's the anatomy of a soul conversation? What does it take to have a soul conversation?
Boy, isn't that there is nothing casual about that. It's such a beautiful question, but that's not something that you can just jump into immediately. That's a serious question. You need to have a little bit of relational safety to even start tiptoeing around the perimeter of that question, let alone get to the heart of it.
And since I didn't have my handy dandy soul conversation toolkit with me, I had to kind of shoot from the hip. And the very first word that came to mind was a challenging one. And I told him that. I said, I'm going to tell you what came to my mind first. You're not going to want to hear it. I don't want to say it. But the word is vulnerability. Vulnerability.
Sounds about right.
It's impossible to have a conversation, a relationship, a connection with someone without vulnerability. So why do so many people run away from it? Why is it terrifying to so many people, often myself included?
Because of the experiences that we've had when we've tried to flex that muscle, we probably started learning about that when we were children, is what's safe to say, with whom can I discuss X, Y, and Z? What are the boundaries of this conversation? Has this ever gone well if I've tried to share my fear about this, my sense of loss in this department, my sense of disappointment in myself or even in God? That's a really, really tough set of questions to approach, because, and you and I have talked about this before, is vulnerability is a two-way street. It takes a first mover, but it also takes a receiver. There's a quarterback and a wide receiver in the game of vulnerability. And if the receiver's not willing to catch the balls that you're throwing, you're never going to score, right? You're never advancing, getting a single first down even.
It's very true. For some reason, I'm thinking of Forrest Gump, and when he was playing ping pong against himself and impressing people because he was just smashing the ball repeatedly against...
Nobody's ever beat the wall, but he came pretty close.
And I don't know, that came to mind as a question emerged, and that is, do we need to be able to be vulnerable with ourselves before we can be vulnerable with someone else? Do we have to create enough safe space with ourselves to be our true self, or do we have to experience that in the loving, listening ears of someone else.
It's funny because you use the word safe space, which is now a politically loaded word to talk about insulating yourself from discomfort. But the way that you're using safe space is actually very different because it's a place that's challenging,
yes,
but healing and yes, promoting growth. So you've completely just reframed a word that is, or a coupling of words that has, people have really been duped into thinking that it means something like, you know, the way pop culture has been defining it, but I love the way that you're defining it now. I've gone off on a tangent, so if you would, please reset that question because I know it was a good one.
I'm just curious if someone is wrestling with vulnerability, if the mention of this topic is making their heart beat a little faster, creating a little more anxiety, I know that's not true for everybody. We get to walk this, part of this conversation has emerged from a Sunday night group with young people that was delightful. And I want to share some of the insights I learned from these young people because they've leaned into this difficult topic and they've survived in a sense. There was a book written years ago.
Thrived even.
Yeah. There's a book written years ago called Influencer. And it was not the influencer that people, again, culture has they keep stealing things.
Hijacking words.
Right. But this book was really about how to bring positive change in people's lives. And they talked about a group of people they did a study with that were scared of snakes. And they're terrified of snakes. And so they showed this whole process of how these people went through exposure to just being in the same room as a snake in behind a glass, and then having to watch someone actually reach their hand in and touch the snake. And eventually, over a long period of time, their comfort levels grew, and eventually these people were able to touch the snake, and their fears were kind of quelled in a sense. Now, some people, it was really funny, the book said some people needed to put goalie masks and goalie pads on to actually touch the snake.
Far out.
And so I that's kind of me with vulnerability.
Well, we've all had different experiences with our metaphorical snakes too. And like snakes, vulnerability is probably not something that we're designed to run towards.
Yes.
We were not designed to play with snakes. Snakes, if you remember in Genesis, we have a pretty spotty history with them.
Yes.
So it's interesting that you made that comparison to vulnerability. I would think that almost as a default, we are not comfortable with it, which I think we should find to be not scary, but encouraging, because that would mean that none of us are particularly well equipped to instantly be the vulnerability charmer as a parallel to the snake charmer.
Yeah, it's very well said. And that's why this discussion group with these young people who have grown better muscles than I have in this area was so fun for me, because I saw some people correctly handling snakes, not being reckless, not being putting boa constrictors around their neck, and then sharing things that they've learned about the importance of vulnerability, how to move towards it. One person in particular said something really insightful for me. They said, there's a difference between being emotional and being vulnerable. And I'm like, well, that is so helpful in clarifying that it's not just if I take a step towards vulnerability, I'm going to lose control of my emotional governor. They're different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the fear that maybe Satan puts in our minds, is if we move towards vulnerability, we become this crazy emotional person that we don't want to become. That's like, no, well, vulnerability and emotions are a little different. Someone else pointed out that there's a purpose behind vulnerability, which I really appreciate, that there's a purposefulness behind sharing authentic, difficult things with others. But what are we going to do? How do we grow this muscle? Regardless of where people are at, you could be 21 and feel like you understand vulnerability and have had positive experiences with trusted people where you're able, they created the attachment phrase, and attachment theory is safe base, a secure base.
Mm-hmm.
A secure base has been created for people to operate, to be themselves. They're celebrated as who they are. They're welcome. They're accepted. All the way up to possibly an older generation to that hears the word and they grimace because it's terrifying for them.
Well, the question that comes to most of us is, what's the point? Mm-hmm. Why would I want to do this?
Yeah.
Why, like, what's the utility of it? Because you said there's a purpose to it. And for some people, it's more obvious what that purpose is. But for a lot of us, it's less obvious.
Yeah.
Why would I want to do that? Why would I want to make disclosures that made me feel less than, that made me feel weak, that was not my highlight reel, but a low light reel? What yeah. value could there possibly be in that? There's some people who see that, but it's not obvious.
Yeah. And it's impossible to do a cost benefit analysis on that and come out and say, oh, okay, you know, I've run the numbers on vulnerability.
Well
and
said.
But the first thing that came to mind when you asked that brilliant question, what's the point? The phrase that came into my mind was, you can't live without it. You cannot live without vulnerability. You can pretend to live. You can create a facade of who you are and a facade of relationships, but you cannot truly live without being vulnerable. Until we've embraced who we truly are and have shared that with someone else.
Can I change the word live to
yes.
love? That
yes.
we can't be loved yes. unless we're vulnerable? Like, it serves very little purpose for somebody to love the character that I play. That doesn't heal me. It doesn't
yes.
give me that deep, meaningful
yes.
satisfaction. And you and I have talked about this both on the podcast as well as off the podcast. This is a persistent conversation, is people tend to put out a character and then it's just characters interfacing with characters, and
yes.
people aren't interfacing
yes.
soul to soul. So if we're resetting on that soul conversation, how do we drop the character that we're playing
yeah.
and step into, well, this is who I am?
It's very good. And you've shared with me a very helpful analogy that I've actually been playing with and building on and thinking about, and it's been helping me. So maybe it would help our audience too. But you shared just kind of an image of the playground in the park. Can you explain that, unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, we were at lunch the other day and we talked about vulnerability as kind of being on a jungle gym in a park. And we're having fun. We know the rules. We know how everything works. We're comfortable on that part of the playground. But around the playground is a wide open space. And it's beautiful.
The park.
The
right.
park. It's beautiful. There's trees everywhere. There's the unknown. There's beauty that is not man-made, that we feel like we are in control of and that we're familiar with. That's an interesting piece of vulnerability. I don't know if I'm going to tie this in perfectly, but oftentimes we think that the playground is the whole park. You know what I mean? If
I
said to you, let's go to this park, mm-hmm. maybe you're just thinking of the playground and you're not even considering things. So people have accused me of being a vulnerable person before. And I think I put on a good vulnerability. I wouldn't call it entirely a show, but I'm comfortable going, taking steps into the park. But here on the podcast, there's still plenty of turf that I'm not willing to get into and explore, which is really fascinating, because the more we expand our vulnerability horizon, if you will, we find that there's new spaces. Maybe we have explored one section of the park, and then we look to our left, we look to our right. a rainstorm happens while we're out in the park and we're like, oh, I need to find shelter. All of a sudden you're in a different area looking under trees, but you're like, wait a second, this isn't safe either. This is nuts. And so with vulnerability comes new levels of awareness of different kinds of wounds and different kinds of places that are not comfortable.
Yes.
So I've kind of gone off on a tangent about this park analogy, and hopefully it
it's perfect.
Landing.
It's exactly what I've been thinking about, and it's been helpful for me, that there's this play structure, a playground in the middle that we feel comfortable sharing certain things with certain people. And we're going to say, hey, I've struggled with this. I've dealt with this. I'm currently wrestling with this. And then there's a whole other space out there that's the park that represents the unknown of things that we either know or don't know that include vulnerable places that we really are uncomfortable with. And I even shared at that lunch. I said, I don't want to go in the park for two reasons. One, I don't want to. It sounds uncomfortable. And two, I don't know if I'm capable.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know if I have the capacity to go to some of those vulnerable places without some help.
You know, this is actually fascinating because it's making me, the image that's popping into my head is, well, it's not an image, it's a memory. A couple times when I was a kid, I convinced my friends, let's run away from home. And they came with me. And it wasn't like I was much younger, and it wasn't like a lengthy trip. We never stayed out overnight, but it was just the idea of it. And we were good enough friends where they were like, this is fine. And so let's bring that back to the park analogy. You are not exploring the park alone. You're exploring the park with Jesus. And he's saying, not let's run away to get away from the jungle gym because it stinks and it's restrictive. It's there is beauty and fun that exists outside of the park.
Yes.
And that changes how we approach the park altogether.
But the lure of beauty is balanced by the threat of the experience. We've got a mutual friend who climbed the Tetons. I'm sure it was very beautiful and very challenging and risky. And in this analogy, I start wandering out into the park away from the playground. I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this little, you know, foray into the world of vulnerability that's uncomfortable for me. And I start seeing gopher holes. I'm like, oh man, I could twist my ankle in one of those. And I start saying sinkholes. And I'm like, that thing would swallow me up. And those are the wounds and injuries that are either self-inflicted or other inflicted that are still there. And that's one of the things I've been playing with this week is, Jesus, how can you fill those gopher holes up with dirt? How can you fill those? How can you bring healing to these things so that eventually I can walk out in the park and possibly even run out in the park? So how does he heal those wounds that are keeping me from being vulnerable, connecting better with him and with those around me?
This is pulling me back to the analogy of walk out to me, Peter. Walk out to me. Keep your eyes on me. And as soon as you start looking around for gopher holes, you're going to find them. You're going to find them. You're going to twist your ankle. What if it's possible that if you just kept your eyes on Jesus, those gopher holes become a lot less relevant and it's not part of the exploration equation? That's where I'm going with this. That's the synthesis of the ocean and the gopher holes.
That's really good. Yeah. I'm quiet because I think I'm going to need to think about that. I think there's some unbelievable truth to that. Yes. Keep my eyes on Jesus. And my immediate next question is, what does that look like? How do I do that? If I'm going to philosophically agree with you saying, yes, that I think that would make walking out in the park helpful to keep my eyes on Jesus and not be looking for gopher holes and sinkholes.
Well, this is the takeaway, the biggest takeaway from that discussion that we had with our young group is, how do I move all of this from a head thought to a heart thought and then let that migrate to a soul thought, which isn't really thinking at all. It's having that woven into the tapestry of our being. Head thought to heart thought, which is semi-oxymoronic, but then to soul tapestry. That's what we're all trying to do with everything that Jesus taught. And it's not, you've said this before, it's paradoxical. We can't think our way into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we're having this conversation, I don't even know if it's possible for us to reach this place. I think we can set the table, but we certainly can't eat the meal. That can only be done experientially. That's something that you've hammered home before, is that unless we're experiencing it through relationship and story, it will not land with us, right?
So, yes, I love that. And what it created for me is a soul conversation with Jesus. I imagine walking out in the playground and looking down, tripping on a gopher hole and landing on my face. And unfortunately, you know what happens when you trip on a gopher hole and land on your face? When you're down on your face, you're looking around. Guess what? You see more gopher holes around you. You know what? Not only did I screw up here, I screwed up here and here and here. And not only am I a failure here, I'm a failure here and here and here. Not only are things not working out here, they're not working out here, here. And all of a sudden, we find ourselves in this crazy vortex of vulnerability and catastrophizing. And we're in this horrible spin cycle. And Jesus walks over. What does he do? We have stepped in the gopher hole. We took our eyes off of Jesus. We stepped in the gopher hole. We're all of a sudden now on a downward spiral of self-focus, self-loathing, self-pity. What does Jesus say to us?
I don't know if that's as relevant as what he does for us and with us, which is he lays down next to us and just hangs out and says, well, you can see some interesting things from down here as well. There's some beautiful things. I noticed the gopher holes too. It's not that I don't see those, but have you seen this? While you're in this space, I think I can show you some things that I notice, not just about you, but about having this different perspective. But the first thing that he does is he gets to our level. And he doesn't shame us for being down there either. He doesn't say, you dope, why are you on the ground? Get up. We got to take a full jog. Don't you understand how far we have to go today? Like, I've been over this with you hundreds of times. That is not what Jesus sounds like. That is not who he is. Am I wrong about this?
No, I love your image, but I'm having a difficulty actually getting there and experiencing that in my heart and my mind. Because for most of my life, when I've been down on my face, having tripped on a gopher hole, I look up and I see Jesus with his hands on his hips.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more shame. I'm feeling like I just need to crawl back to the playground. I'm just going back to the play structure because this isn't for me. And what you are describing is something that sounds so appealing and beautiful. I don't know if I know how to get there.
I think that's amazing that you can acknowledge that. And I don't necessarily agree with you. That might be how you're feeling right now. I know you've been there. I know you go there. But we forget what it's like, too. Every time we hit a new gopher hole, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
And there is kind of some shame involved where it's like, geez, I'm an adult. I shouldn't be tripping in gopher holes. I should know how to walk. What's the deal? And that compounds. I mean, if you're a chronic gopher hole tripper, which we all are if we really think about it, it takes a toll. It's a tax.
Yeah, I tell you that there were a lot of impactful things that came from a group. When you gather a group of people and create space with great questions and some scripture and create a secure base where people know they're going to be accepted and they can share their thoughts, amazing things happen. I see it every single week. It is beautiful, incredible. And there were so many good things shared. We actually went around the circle and people shared, hey, this was what was most impactful for me. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really helpful. What was the single most impactful thing that someone shared for me was essentially using this analogy of when I trip and I've fallen on the gopher hole, when a friend says to me, I'm here for you. I'll be here for you tomorrow. For some reason, those words just washed over me with some power and with some beauty that is something I need to enfold into my operating system.
I'm not going anywhere.
I'm here. Many people in my life have run away when they've found me out in the park having tripped on a gopher hole. Oh, is that the way you really are? Confirming my greatest fear, if you really knew me, you wouldn't love me. Oh, they really
That's,
know.
Okay, hold on, time out.
Yes.
That is the greatest fear that exists in most of us, and we don't even want to touch that.
No.
You just talked about, you just casually wanted to brush by like one of the most fundamental soul level anxieties that everybody experiences when they gain enough awareness into the subject. When they've fallen in enough gopher holes, eventually people will arrive at that conclusion. They might not articulate it as succinctly as you just did. If you really knew me, you wouldn't love me. That's a lie that so many of us have operated with for so long, and we haven't, unless we know what it is, we can't blow it up, or we can't invite Jesus to blow it up for us, to help him blow it up.
Yep. Yeah.
But we can't brush past that, because that is such a high impact lie of the enemy that will cripple us.
Yes. And Jesus takes that lie and completely reverses it. He does the half Nelson on it, because it says, you will never understand my love until you bring all of yourself to me. You'll never be able to experience my love. It's not if Jesus really knew me, he wouldn't love me. It's Jesus can't really love me until he knows all of me. And we hold back for some reason, not wanting to go into the park even with Jesus or even with our best friend.
We just don't have a category for Jesus most of the time, right?
Not because a correct category.
That
yes.
Well said.
Yes.
Good clarifier.
Yeah.
Because there's no relationship that operates like our relationship with Jesus.
Yes.
But the way that our worldly relationships operate, unfortunately, that we bring a little of that, or maybe even a lot of that, to our relationship with Jesus. So, you know, this was a big takeaway that I had from this vulnerability study, is I've gotten comfortable bringing 90%, 93% vulnerability to Jesus, but I still have areas. But I'm like, I've gotten really comfortable at it. And I feel like I'm like, yeah, I'm doing really well. But he doesn't want to heal 93% of us. He wants to heal 100% of us. Not just as individuals, but really as the body.
Yeah.
He wants to heal everybody to the fullest extent imaginable. I don't even know how to articulate my internal reaction to that. Somebody wants to know 100% of me and then love 100% of me. That's insane sounding.
Yeah.
And in a beautiful way.
And as much as we use words, words can't describe the path nor the beauty of being there. At some point, words aren't going to be, it's like just trying to describe a sunset. It's like, it's bright, it's kind of orangish, yellowish, reddish. The words can't describe that, but you experience that. And what you're talking about is an experience and a connection with Jesus that really can't be put into words, but it can be experienced.
Well, it can be lived, and then other people who are on the playground, they see you out in the park and they say, hey, what's that like?
Yes.
What are those two up to?
Yes.
I think that is a way that I hope I can live out today.
Yeah.
Is that other people could see me out in the park and say, what are they doing?
Walking with a smile.
Yeah. What is that about?
Yeah.
They seem like they're having a blast. Yes. What is that about?
Right. That's so good. What a great image. Thank you for allowing me to explore this space.
This was awesome, man.
And I do think it's important for us to acknowledge and recognize even those small moments where we might not want Jesus because it feels too close. We have too much shame. We have too much guilt. We have too much, I don't know, self-deprecations. I don't even want to be near Jesus right now. Really key in on that and be focused on that because that's where he wants to be the worst. That's where he can bring his best. And I love the image that you have about walking around the park, smiling with Jesus.
Well, like before we wrap up, I know we're about to, there's some risk involved in this. There is. But if we stare at it too long, we might take steps back rather than steps forward. So we had a good friend of ours at our men's group the other day say, if you're looking at a double black diamond on a ski run and you stare down it too long, you won't go. So if you feel the impulse, if you've made it up the chairlift, don't overthink it. Just go. Yeah. That's what I would encourage people to lean into today is as soon as you recognize it, try to jump in as quickly as you can or else the moment kind of vanishes.
Yes, that's so good. And I want to add something that you shared just maybe 5 minutes ago that's going to stay with me that's very impactful. And that is, for some reason, the relationships that we've, earthly relationship we've had have shaded our understanding of relationship with Jesus. How important is it that we try to reverse that, right?
100%.
How sad is it that I've let my experience with other humans cloud my experience with God?
Well, let's just call that the default, though. Everybody,
yes.
I think that's more of a default than it is the exception.
And
so
it needs to be reversed.
So 100%. So, but if we're all or most of us are in that category, then we can help reverse it together. We aren't doing this reversal alone, right? We're doing it with Jesus, but we're also doing it with the people around us. This isn't like a solo exercise,
so,
right?
So good. That's so good. I do want to thank the people of the walk or the beach walk that support this, but I don't want to thank them just because they're financially supporting our podcaster. I want to thank them because last Friday we had an unbelievable conversation. Space was created. Scripture was shared. I want our next episode to be about that because a couple of wise, insightful people, even in our little small group, shared things that were fantastic. And I'm so excited to go this week to meet and discuss with those people again in the weeks coming. And I'm excited for our next podcast because I learned some things that helped me take 2, 3, 4 steps closer to God and the people around me just from that. And so, man, thank you. Thank you for the people of the walk, the beach walk, Go Ministry International for supporting this, for creating space for people to discuss Jesus and how he can truly be lived in and through us. Thank you for listening. And I pray that you would continue to just grow in an accurate understanding and knowledge of who Jesus is so that you can walk well with him today and smile and show the world the hope, joy, and peace that they need to see in the life lived well. So thank you for listening. Have a great day.